We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Texans training camp is happening now.
Oh, yes, a beautiful Monday. Dirty's back.
He's back.
He's back.
Come on.
He drank all them Coors Light. Got on the... And listen, man, I was hoping we'd come back. The Astros had a huge weekend series. I was hoping we'd come back, maybe have a little Earth, Wind, and Fire, a little celebration walking in after
happen.
A big series. And they all went out and showed their asses. Every last one of them. And to be honest, with the way they acted and played all weekend, you have no choice but to start at the top, Clint.
Yeah, there's no other way to look at it right now than Dusty Baker. I mean, there's so much going on with the shortened season. I think with every team around Major League Baseball, I think the managers are magnified in this short season and how they handle the lineup, how they handle their pitching staff, both the starters and the pen and the closers. And then, you look at how they handle just the adversity of this season with every game meaning more. So I think generally speaking, managers are under the microscope this year. And their jobs are going to be criticized more this year than ever before. And Dusty Baker happens to be in the one position in Major League Baseball that regardless of who it is, that guy was going to be on the top of the list in terms of the critics shooting at the job that he does or doesn't do. And we all thought, I thought, and I continue to think, I'm not completely off the wagon yet in terms of Dusty Baker being the guy for the Astros, given what they've gone through with the cheating scandal. I still believe that Dusty is the right guy for that
That's
job.
That's what we've been saying. He's the guy.
I don't doubt that he's the right guy for that job. I think that his experience, both as a player and as a coach, in good and bad times, I think he's a good fit for that. But, man, he's making it really, really difficult for me to stay behind him as a manager simply in game time, simply in – whether we're talking about the extra innings and how you have a plan or don't have a plan for extra innings, if you talk about how there's certain hitters that are struggling that appear to be lost, and I'm saying lost, I ain't talking about just struggling at the plate. I'm talking about Altuve going up there and not having like just swinging out of his shoes, no matter
doesn't
his situation, no matter the game situation, he just is swinging out of his shoes.
He doesn't give a damn.
And then you got coaches popping off.
What the hell?
And I don't mind Dusty popping off. In fact, one reason I think Dusty Baker's a good fit here is because I'm good with Dusty Baker popping off. I'm not glad, but I get excited about the fact that you can hear everything that's said from the coaches from the dugout right now. And you can hear Dusty Baker barking at folks. I can appreciate that. But the looseness in which the organization appears to be ran from the manager position right now, it's a big time concern for me.
Yeah. Dusty, he has to get better, right? Like, yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I think we're on the same mindset of I'm not willing, ready to just say Dusty is a detriment. He sucks it up. Because I actually kind of disagree in a way. My issues with Dusty haven't been as much on the field. I think there have been some mistakes. Friday night you could give a little bit to, which we'll talk to. I think the one game he was really – I think you completely give the loss to was the second game against the Dodgers. where he had three opportunities to do something and just did nothing. Other than that, Clint, I don't know if Joe Torre, Tony La Russa, with the injuries, with the lack of play from the players he's supposed to be trusting in, not coming through on a pretty regular basis, I don't know how much managers like that could have a difference with this team. Because you lose your best pitcher, you lose your closer. George Springer's in and out of the lineup, and when he was in, he'd been struggling most of the year. You spoke about Altuve. There have just been some struggles where I don't know how many managers would improve. My issue with Dusty, and it's the first time I've ever thought, maybe this ain't as perfect as I thought, is things that are happening off the field. Like, as you said, Alex Cintron, your damn bench coach, hitting coach, is popping off on the dugout. At least pop off when you're in the right. All right? That's not you. Him coming at Chandler Rome earlier or yesterday talking about, why are you asking me all these negative questions? Why y'all keep playing so bad? You keep playing bad. We're going to ask you questions. We weren't going to ask you, hey, man, how was your birthday this past year? No, man, y'all just got in a brawl and got swept, and it looks like the division is over. My stuff is off the field more than it is on the field with Dusty, and it is a bit surprising because you thought he would have that part of it down.
Yeah, you would think so. I don't know, man. I just tend to the pitching aspect of things, of pulling guys too early or leaving them in too long and figuring out how to handle just the barrage of injuries that the Astros have had in the last few weeks. I mean, I just don't know how anybody makes those decisions and they're 100% correct. Like I said, Joe, it's the lack of a plan. I don't need to agree with you. This is a lot like Bill O'Brien and some of the play calling and some of the – like, I don't need to agree with your plan or necessarily say, I would have done it that same way. I just – when there is a lack of something, when there's a lack of an effort, a lack of a plan to move runners, like you said in the Dodgers game, Altuve swinging out of his shoes when you know he's struggling, there's a runner at second, you're just trying to, like, there's clearly no message being pounded into his head of, hey man, we've got to move the runner, we've got to approach this at bat a little bit different. To me, those are things that man, it's very frustrating and it's very difficult to get behind. I know Landry Locker was absolutely beside himself.
Can we get into that?
Please let's get into it. You're not going to be under. To me, this is one that again, it's an in-game decision. That man, I just don't understand why you would make this decision in pinch hitting Toro for Tucker ever. I just don't know why that decision would ever be made. And so, one of about three or four instances where, man, I'm really concerned with what's going on in the diamond.
This is the best midday show in all of Houston. In fact, damn sure the most entertaining, Landry and Lopez. And Landry really cut loose about the Toro and the Toro pinch hit for Kyle Tucker. Here's a little bit of Landry from earlier today on In the Loop.
What he did in the 10th inning on Friday is the most idiotic, stupid, out of touch, no method to madness move that I've seen a manager make in baseball in a long time. One out, runner on third, go ahead, run at the plate. Kyle Tucker due up. Dusty Baker pinch hits Kyle Tucker for Toro. He pinch hits Toro. Now, I know a lot of people will say, well, a lefty, Jake Diekman, was on the mound, and you bring in the righty to face the lefty. Toro's a righty. Tucker is a lefty. Okay, let's look at the actual stats of this situation, Dusty. Kyle Tucker is better against lefties than he is against righties. Yeah. He bats .327.
And that's a little bit of Landry. And this is one where I think we're doing a little too much. And I think it is – you thought the Astros were going to be a certain team, and I get it, and they've had some things happen to where it seems like it's just negative things. Right here, now we've entered a place where Kyle Tucker, who has 185 at-bats in his career, that Kyle Tucker can't be pinch hit for when he's facing a lefty. All right, listen, I don't know. I don't know, Clint, why Dusty has a love affair for Abraham Toro. I'm not understanding that.
I'm glad you mentioned Toro because that has a big part to do with this.
I don't understand. I don't love Toro coming to, but it's not stupid that Dusty would say, all right, game on the line. Kyle Tucker, who has not established any kind of a track record with 180 at-bats in his career, to say, yep, Kyle Tucker is good to face lefties with the game on the line. All right, that makes sense that he would go to a righty. I don't know what it is about Toro, once again, that he loves, but that does make sense that he would take Kyle Tucker out because Kyle Tucker has not shown enough of a sample size where he just faces lefties.
Well, Show, I don't like the looseness of how the organization is being ran from Dusty Baker. The popping off, the players appear not to have a plan and not to have a plan from above. But I think the team can overcome those issues, whether it's Dusty popping off from the dugout or it's Citrone popping off from the dugout. A team can overcome that. To me, I disagree with you. A team can't overcome a manager making the decision to pinch hit for someone when clearly the numbers, I know it, maybe it's a small sample size of 180 at-bats, that's fine, but you can't make decisions to pinch hit for a guy when the numbers are, especially when you're such an analytical team, the numbers can't be what they were in Tucker's favor and you pinch hit for Toro. The Toro aspect of this situation plays a big role here. If it were somebody that, like Springer, I think Springer was out earlier in the year when he sat him for a game, he pinch hit for him, you know, or pinch hit him in the eighth or ninth inning, you know, those kind of things, that's a different story. But Toro for Tucker in that situation with the numbers what they were, it's hard to look at that show and go, man, our manager's making the best decisions that are going to put this team in position to win games. It's hard to look at that and say that's the case there.
Yeah, just as we said, Dusty Baker, he has to get better. To me, it's more off the field. On the field, I don't think it's asinine that Dusty Baker would look at Kyle Tucker, who's been a disappointment, right? He's been a disappointment since he has been up to the big leagues, who had 131 at-bats coming into the season, to say, Jake Diekman is a long-legged lefty who is deceptive to lefties and much tougher on lefties with the ball, with the game on the line. I don't think – now, I may have gone with Stubbs. I may have felt more comfortable with Stubbs. I don't know what it is about Toro.
You got to be honest. You wouldn't have felt comfortable about any of them.
No, but I don't think right. Dusty's crazy for saying, Kyle, who's hitting 2-0-something – is, you know, against a lefty with the game on the line. To me, that's not a – I just think it's a snowball effect that everything is going wrong to make that stuff heightened. But that's not a stupid move to take a lefty who hasn't proved – if this was Michael Brantley
he's batting 300-plus versus lefties.
And 180 at-bats, man.
But then you put Toro in there. I don't care if it's 10 at-bats. Toro's not the answer.
Toro, like I said, I don't know his love affair. I cannot defend why he loves Toro so much. But the thought process of putting a righty up there instead of a lefty is not asinine. It's not Bill. He said it's the worst thing he's seen in Houston. It is not Bill O'Brien going, kicking a field goal on fourth down and then deciding to go for a fake punt in a playoff game and not decide if he's going to be aggressive or not. It was not along those lines. But he does. We agree that Dusty, there's a lot of stuff circling him that is been a part of this, but Dusty has to be better. He has to be better and have his team in a better place.
He's got to be better. I'm just less concerned with the stuff that you knew that came with Dusty Baker. You knew Dusty Baker was hired for a reason to help this team get through the adversity. You knew that he was a guy that wasn't going to take any crap off of people. You knew he was a guy that was going to pop off from the dugout and get kicked out of games, especially with no fan, no crowd noise. You knew those things were going to happen. I'm concerned again about the looseness of it and how it starts trickling down into the hitting coach coming out of the dugout and taunting players. There's no excuse for that. But I do think the Astros can win, or a team can win, with that kind of mentality and that kind of stuff going on. Man, the on-the-field stuff in between nine innings, that's hard to overcome.
J.J. Watt said something this weekend that should give all Texans fans some real confidence. We'll tell you exactly what that is coming up next.
Texans training camp is happening now.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the Show.
Ah! hot dog, baby. Training camp, man.
It's here, man.
Come on. You don't mean to tell me you don't feel like picking up the ball and going?
Come on. Four pounds, like, eight so laces, baby. Let me spin it around the park a little bit. Why don't you, man?
I know you got to feel it. Texas training camp. Nobody, and I mean nobody, is covering Texans training camp like we are. We'll be hearing from Sean Pendergast of Pendergast, of Payne and Pendergast here a little bit later on in the 5 o'clock hour. He is one of 10 people who will be live in the bubble, and we'll hear from him. Access that no other station has around here. And speaking of
that's what I'm jealous of, by the way.
You're jealous of him?
Last year, man, there's 150 people in there. We're having to fight for elbowing folks, try to get a little view of what's going on, man. This year?
10 deep.
10 deep, man. They're going to be able to social distance, catch literally every snap of training camp, man. That's what I'm jealous of. Damn you, Sean Pendergast. I've never wanted to have a Q-tip stuffed up my nose more than I do right now.
Okay.
No? Okay. The hell with y'all. Y'all don't like it the way I do.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like we like things the same.
No?
Some things.
You know, the only way that would have been blatantly obvious if you said, hell yeah. Hell yeah, where are the Q-tips?
Hell yeah, where are the Q-tips? All right, coming up here in just a little bit, we'll be speaking at about 2:35. We'll be speaking with Peter King, who wrote a great column and got access, like Sean will be getting, got access with the Houston Texans, and we'll talk to him about some of these things. But one of the things J.J. Watt expressed that I think should give hell not just Texans fans, but football fans across the country a lot of maybe confidence that we'll get the season going. This was him with Peter King. He expressed that he is optimistic that the season will start, at least week one will start on time. At this point, we can kind of keep guys in a bubble before the season starts. Now, he goes on to say, once we get on airplanes, it may be a little different, but at least week one, he feels optimistic that week one will happen.
Yeah, well, you're talking about J.J. Watt. You're talking about a guy that was the mouthpiece for the NFL when he was hearing from rookies on his own team that didn't know exactly what was going on hours before they were supposed to report to Houston for training camp. And so you're getting word from definitely one of the most powerful voices from a player's perspective in the NFL right now, that he believes that week one will happen. I mean, I think anybody would be a fool to come out right now and say, well, man, we think the season's going to happen, because nobody knows what's going to happen once you get on a plane, once you leave the bubble, once you get in other hotels, and how you control 50-plus guys. In MLB, it's been hard for a couple of organizations to control 30.
Yeah.
And so, you know, controlling 50-plus, you never know what can happen. But the fact that J.J. Watt believes that, again, he's already in camp, he's already reporting to the facility in Houston, and he's already gone through all of the requirements in terms of testing for the COVID-19, he's already in the middle of all of that. And if being in the middle of all of that leads him to believe that week one will happen and that he's optimistic, then I don't know why the hell we wouldn't be at this point in time. So it's really just refreshing to hear that guy make that comment from inside the bubble.
Well, I mean, it makes sense, right? Like, leading into, especially with the Texans, we see teams like the Saints that are just kind of forcing a bubble. But the Texans, they're very, very cognizant of how they want to keep their players safe with how they're designing their practice facility and the stadium. And you think most teams will at least go in that direction, to where the first part of the season, I think people are going to take it serious, right?
Yeah.
Then it's just when you start moving on after the season. Then you start having other teams face other players. That's where the concern will jump up.
This is the one show where the culture – the veteran-laden team that Bill O'Brien has built and created, I think it's always been a plus. And that having that kind of culture in team sports, particularly in football, I think is a huge advantage. We don't discuss it enough, but it is a big-time advantage right now, in a sense of getting guys to buy into doing the right things. Go home, go to your hotel, go to your home, and come to and from the facility, and that's it. Don't make any stops in between when you're gone. The team that Bill O'Brien has built, the culture that Bill O'Brien has built, while they're in Houston, I think is a huge advantage. Once they get off off the grounds at NRG, or they bring another team in here, then all of a sudden you're dependent on that other team to be living life the same way, playing the game the same exact way. Now, there's obviously a ton of risk there, but I think, man, it starts with J.J. Watt, but I just think the culture that Bill O'Brien's built, as long as they're in Houston in this bubble, I think it's a big-time
plus. And something you've said is, like, these players are watching the other sports. They're seeing what's happening in baseball. If you want to make that money, if you want to get what you need to get to, and you want to keep yourself safe, you're watching what they're doing, and you're going to avoid that, at least at the beginning.
And J.J. even mentioned that later on in the Peter King article. He actually mentioned that fines are in place for players that don't abide by the rules and regulations. And really, we all know the ones he's talking about are the ones that are COVID-19 related.
Yeah.
It's good to hear that, you know, with these guys, seven, some of the guys even 10 days into reporting to training camp.
One of the big things we're seeing is you're listening here to Clint Sterner in the show on Sports Radio 610, Houston Sports Leader. And we're discussing here this Peter King got access with the Texans and discussing some of the things he is finding out and how different training camp is. We'll be speaking to him coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. But Jeff Kaplan, the infection control officer with the Texans, one of the things that we're seeing to bring more confidence here is this is for the Texans 9 straight days that they have had 0 positive tests, right?
Yep.
They have not had any positive test. One of the best organizations in dealing with this, that's from anybody. And so that kind of stuff, that continues, that gives you more and more confidence that the Texans will be able to roll in September 10th against the Chiefs and be all right and have everybody they need to be playing.
Yeah, the more days you can stack on top of each other, obviously, while you're here and you have control of the team, the more positive, I guess it's negatives, it's not positive, right? I mean, there's 0 positives. The more days that you can stack on top of each other, with that being the result, the better off you're going to be. And these guys are on a streak right now of not having any. So what the Texans are doing, the money that they've thrown at COVID-19 and all of the different changes that they've made at NRG Stadium, clearly they're paying off, Joe.
Peter King coming up, and we'll discuss more of that with him here in about 10 minutes or so. But, Clint, man, we've got to get to this. This is one of the big stories that's popping up. Having mixed things, Dan Patrick of NBC Sports, Dan Patrick of the Dan Patrick Show, he'd come out earlier today and said that he has got sources telling him that the Big Ten is out. The Big Ten is canceling their fall football season. And then we've also heard that potentially the Pac-12 would follow suit. Now, there have been some conflicting reports from The Athletic. Some people saying Big Ten spokespersons have not said that they have come up with a decision quite yet with that. But, man, if the Big Ten is out for the season, it's one thing that the MAC is out. But the Big Ten, if they are going to, with Ohio State and Michigan and all those big powers, cancel their football season, that is really concerning for the rest of the league.
Yeah, it's scary what could be coming down the pipe, because typically you said it when the Ivy League canceled their basketball tournament, the next thing you know, the SEC canceled theirs, and it was just a domino effect. And so you hope that this isn't one of those situations where the Big Ten and Pac-12 cancel their seasons, and it's just a matter of time before the other schools, the other conferences do the same. So I don't, when I look at this, man, it's painful to think that we could have a year without college football. And I immediately, obviously, scrolling social media, come across Joe Burrow. To think that there's athletes out there, the next Joe Burrow's out there, whether it's a quarterback or a running back or a tight end, but a guy that could just jump on the scene and end up having an unbelievable college career. Joe Burrow had the arguably the greatest college football season.
He was going to be a late-round pick.
Yeah, at best. But he ended up having the best college football season a quarterback's ever had, arguably.
And he went number one.
I mean, he would be doing radio in Baton Rouge right now. But you and I have to be worried about him coming over here and taking our job in about 10 years.
I don't think he would have got to do radio. I don't think he would have got to do radio.
To think that that wouldn't happen, man. There's going to be so many senior football players that are going to be affected by this, man. It just sucks to think that that's the best that they could do across the board, man. I just hope this isn't a domino effect.
I'm nervous because if the Big Ten shuts it down, I think the Pac-12 will follow. And that's when you get concerned because now the other conferences, they would be taking a chance on if something were to happen, if you get a rash of players getting sick or something like that. Now, why didn't you sit out? Why didn't you shut it down? So this is the first time you've been real. I thought the NCAA tournament being canceled was rough. This would also be horrible if there is no college football on Saturday. All right, Peter King of NBC Sports. Folks, he is one of the most respected and keyed in people in the NFL. He got access to Texans training camp and got to go in depth to see how things are going over at Kirby. We will pick his brain on what he learned coming up next.
Texans training camp is happening now. Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show.
Peter King of NBC Sports. Also, check out his column that he does each and every week, but this one especially, Texans fans, Football Morning in America, where he goes extensively about his experience with the Texans. And Peter, this seems to be a brand new type of training camp. I know you have seen a lot of training camps. This has to be completely different than anything you've experienced. Can you kind of take us step by step of how different this was from your experience with the Texans?
Well, you know, look, we're all trying to do things a little bit different. We have no choice. And so one of the things that I really have wanted to do is, you know, in the last 2-3 weeks since training camp was about to kick off and then was about to start, I was basically looking for some team to allow me to tell the story of their training camp, you know, what it's really like because it's so incredibly different. And so, I made a few phone calls and Bill O'Brien and the Texans said that they would do it, sort of a day in the life of a training camp. And so I basically started with their infection control officer, you know, basically woke up at 4:30 last Thursday, checked his email on his phone, and basically found out he didn't have any positive tests, took a deep breath of relief, and basically went from there. Was on the phone with Bill O'Brien as he drove to work. And anyway, it ended about 10 o'clock that night, 10 o'clock Central Time, when a rookie named John Reed went to bed at the Residence Inn, about a 5-minute drive from the stadium. And I just tried to document everything that happened in between. And the really interesting thing, basically the weirdest thing that I think, if somebody says, well, what surprised you? And I said, well, what surprises me? Well, actually, nothing in a year like this. But what really surprised me, honestly, is that the Houston Texans spend 1 hour a day together in training camp. 1 hour. Mm. One. And, you know, they have training camp activities all day, you know, basically starting when the rookies report for their COVID test at 5:45 a.m., you know, and it doesn't end until O'Brien and Jack Easterby walk out, maybe 9:30, 10 o'clock. And in the middle of that, they are together as a full squad from 2 to 3 p.m. That is it. And so that's how weird a thing this is this year in training camp in the NFL.
Peter, you've covered, I mean, a million different teams, a million different training camps, and been around all the different games for a long time, man. When you see that kind of training camp and what the Texans are having to do, you got to assume that everybody around the league is doing something similar.
Yes,
man,
that's right.
What do you think this does to the quality of play, the product that is the NFL, if indeed we do get to watch TV games on TV down the road? What does it do?
What a great question. I mean, I've been thinking about that. I thought about it all weekend as I sat and I was writing all these weird things. Isn't it weird that here we are, and until, you know, on one of the first days they were together in late July, Randall Cobb, who's going to play a crucial role on this team, walked up to a guy, started talking to him about schemes and everything like that. He thought it was his offensive coordinator, but he wasn't positive and had to call him that night and say, hey, was that you I talked to today? I mean, you know, these guys are going to be working hand in glove this year. Imagine you walk up to somebody and because of the mask and because of the newness, they don't know each other. It's just all of it is very, very weird. And it's truly, this story I wrote today is really one of the most enlightening / weird stories I've written in a long time.
Peter King, NBC Sports, is with us. He followed the Texans around and got to see a day in the life of training camp with the Texans. In your opinion, from what you were able to experience with the Texans, if most of the league is handling things the way the Texans are, do you think that it would put the NFL in a much better chance to be able to get at least to the start of their season without having any issues like baseball is having?
Great question. Then that's really, honestly, that's the only question that matters. I've heard people say, oh my God, the quality of play this year is really going to suffer. And I start laughing. And I said, listen, let's just try to get play, period. You know, let's just forget about quality of, and again, I don't mean this literally, but, you know, health of players this year and readiness of players, available of players, to me, is far more important than the quality of play. We're going to see some funny things. Maybe not, you know, teams might not think it's funny, but we are going to see some things that really don't work all that well. But, about 2-3 weeks ago, an executive in the NFL said to me, we were talking, and I've had this opinion all along, you know, this is going to be an uncomfortable season. This is going to be a season of, you know, where everything isn't fair. Some team is really going to get jobbed. Some team might have an outbreak in its community, and local government might say, no sporting events, period, in our community. You got to go play somewhere else. So that team might have to play on the road for 6 weeks. I don't know. I'm just making that up. You just don't know. You do not know what's going to happen this year. But I guess my point is this executive said to me, and I thought it was hilarious. He said, this is the kind of year that you're going to wake up the day after the Super Bowl. This is a guy who fervently believes the season will be played. You're going to wake up the day after the Super Bowl, and the Detroit Lions will have won the Super Bowl. And he didn't mean that to dog the Lions. He just means that a team that nobody expects to win the Super Bowl is going to win it. And I think, really, when you think about it, you know, that is what we were totally, totally set up to do and set up to be. It's going to be a strange, strange year.
Peter, is just listening to you, in light of what's happened and seeing how Major League Baseball's handled things, the NBA and NHL has handled things, is there any chance? We've all heard there's no way, there's too many players. Is there any chance that the NFL could go to some kind of a bubble to try to protect their players and their season?
I mean, never say never. You don't know, but you know, I've tried to explain this to people about bubbles, okay? So, you know, in the NHL, basically, they were going away for however long it's going to be, the furthest it'll be, or the longest a team will be away, you know, is whatever, 2.5 months maybe. Basketball the same way. The vast majority of the NBA teams either are not going away or are going to be in that bubble for, you know, less than 2 months. I think 22 teams of the 30 are going to be away for less than 2 months. And the difference really in football is that if you ask a team to go into a bubble, you're asking a team to go away from their family for 5 months, period. And you are asking not maybe 25 or 30 people like you would with the Houston Rockets. I have no idea how many people are in their group, including players. But you are asking, you know, essentially 100 people to go away from every team. And not only would all those 100 people go away from every team, but most would go away for about 5 months. Some who go to the Super Bowl would go away for 6 months. I just don't know that you can get 32 to 3,500 people to disappear, basically almost on a moment's notice, from their families. I mean, look, I'm just asking this question theoretically. If all the teams went to a bubble now, let's say an American city that had places that they could find training facilities, you know, in the area, enough for 32 entities, 32 teams, maybe Houston, maybe Dallas. You know, do you think that, let's just say for the sake of argument, that Matthew Stafford, whose wife has had cancer, you know, who's got, I think, 4 kids, you think he's going to say, bye, honey, I'll see you in 5 months? It's just, I think it's unrealistic to expect that all of these teams would be able to field an optimal team. And I kind of doubt they'd be able to do that.
Peter, you mentioned in your article, because I know my fiance, she'd have my bags packed, Chief. I'm going to tell you, she'd have my bags packed and a foot
people,
in the middle.
And some people would, because some people either are bachelors or don't have that sort of family obligation. But
right. Well, JJ, you had some time. I guess you spoke to JJ Watt about some of this stuff throughout your article, man. One thing I thought he said that was powerful was, you've already mentioned, was that he believes that week one will happen because the team has control of the whole group moving forward. And once they start meeting other teams and having the physicality that's involved in the NFL, it'll change the game a little bit. How much were you able to pull from your conversations with Bill O'Brien and JJ Watt and what you saw? Did it give you confidence that these guys, twofold, one, that they'll get deeper than week one, but two, that the Texans are handling this as well as any team in the league?
I think there's a lot of teams that are handling it great. I can't, it's hard for me to compare, because if you said to me, hey, what are the things the Dallas Cowboys are doing? I have no idea. I've done zero reporting on it. So all I do know that, you know, as of Sunday, the Houston Texans had given their 180 members of their organization, players, coaches, staff, 180 members, 11 COVID tests each. Okay, that adds up to 1,980 COVID tests. The Texans have zero positive tests, according to Amy Palsik, their vice president of communications. She checked for me. Zero positive COVID tests out of 1,980. Now, there could be three or four other teams that are also throwing perfect games right now. I don't know, but I do know that, in my opinion, especially in a hot spot, you've got to give the Texans credit. And you have to understand, at least in my opinion, how difficult all of this is, just because you're asking every person in your organization to make these sacrifices, you know, to even to a sidewalk cafe, don't go out to eat with your wife, you know, just basically be a monk, you know, essentially for the next 5 months. And there's a good chance that the team that does that the best is going to have a chance to play deep into January.
Peter King, NBC Sports, is with us. Peter, I got to get your opinion on this, because I've been really thinking about this, and you spent some time with Bill O'Brien and before this year. Do you think the reputation of Bill O'Brien around the league in media spaces is fair, given the amount of success that he has had? And even as a general manager, it's not like he's bringing back bad football players on the team. There have been some high-profile moves with Clowney and Hopkins. But do you think Bill O'Brien's reputation is fair?
Well, I'm not really – I can't say that I call up, say, Sean Payton and say, what do you think of Bill O'Brien and what do you think of his reputation? I mean, I might be talking about certain people around the league, but that's not really what I do that much. But I will just say this. Look, I do think that there were a lot of extenuating circumstances in the DeAndre Hopkins trade, but overall I didn't like the return on that trade. I just didn't think they got enough. And on the Laremy Tunsil trade, I actually thought that trade was extremely understandable, with one exception. They should have gotten a contract done before that trade was made official. They would have saved, I don't know what, maybe $3 million a year on the cap long term. And so that's my two only issues, you know, with O'Brien. And again, I am not around this team every day, so I can't tell. There's a good chance that Bill O'Brien would have two or three inside stories about why he only got a two for DeAndre Hopkins, and why, and obviously you got David Johnson, but why other guys in the league, and why say that, you know, the Jets got two ones for Jamal Adams. It's, you know, there are reasons that all these things happen, but, you know, I'm just not around the team and around the organization enough to know everything about why both those trades happened the way they did.
Peter, let's take why out of the conversation here and just look at the Texans from a 30,000-foot view, in your opinion. Obviously, Kansas City's leading the way here. Baltimore's not far behind the Kansas City Chiefs. And the Texans are in a conversation somewhere below those guys. With all the moves that were made, the Randall Cobb added, Brandon Cooks added, Will Fuller, if he can stay healthy, J.J. Watt, if he can stay healthy, Deshaun Watson, if he can take that step from year three to year four, those are a lot of ifs out there, Peter. Sorry about that. But I mean, do you see the Texans being able to take that next step and to join the group of the Baltimore Ravens and everybody else nipping at the heels of the Kansas City Chiefs?
I don't personally. I mean, I think they're a good team, but I don't think they're on Baltimore or Kansas City's level. Then again, you know, I don't think any teams in the AFC are right now. Now, you know, I think after last year, you have to look at the Tennessee Titans and you have to really cast an admiring eye on what Mike Vrabel has done there. Look, everything went right for the Titans in the last month of the season last year. They caught New England when New England started 8-0, but after Halloween, the Patriots had a worse record than the Miami Dolphins. So, you know, Tennessee caught them at the right time, and the Patriots weren't very good in the first week of January. And then, you know, the Texans, obviously, they basically steamrolled Baltimore. And I'd say they came within two or three series of it coming right down to the last play or two, you know, against Kansas City. They played well for about 40 minutes against Kansas City. So I guess I would look at all that and say every team's got a lot of ifs. Ryan Tannehill had the best passer rating in football since 2013 last year. Who on God's green earth saw that coming? So I need to see Ryan Tannehill do it over 16 weeks. First of all, I need to see if Derrick Henry can take that pounding that he took late in the season for 4 months and not 1 month and not 6 weeks, you know. So those are the kind of things that are going to tell the tale of this season. The Texans are very, very capable of doing this, but you say the exact thing. I mean, you know, you certainly can't assume that either J.J. Watt or Will Fuller, each of whom is a top 10 important player on the Houston Texans, you can't look at their track records and say, yep, you know, I'm assuming we're getting 15 or 16 games out of those guys. You just can't do it. And so, you know, again, I do think I really love the acquisition of Brandon Cooks. I definitely think Randall Cobb has got a couple of good years left in him. So I think they're going to be good enough on offense, assuming they get, let's say, 10 games out of Fuller. But I think they've got very, very good competition. And if Philip Rivers plays fairly mistake-free football, and I don't know if he will or not, I think those three teams, all three teams, you know, basically Indianapolis, Tennessee, Houston, I'd almost flip a three-sided coin to see who wins the division.
Peter King, NBC Sports, thank you so much for joining us, and we appreciate your insight.
No problem, guys. Enjoyed it.
All right. That's Peter King. Coming up, the stories you need to know in Houston, the Big 3 at 3 coming up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.